Tu Nanda Nanda Bhuchatu. Bobo Rajan Subhadram Te. Vacham No Bahitashinu. Yapancha Barshas Tapasa. Bhavan Devam Atat Atitripat. Sunanda said, Nanda and Sunanda, the two confidential associates of Lord Vishnu, said, Dear King, let there be all good fortune unto you. Please attentively hear what we shall say. When you were only 5 years old, you underwent severe austerities, and you thereby greatly satisfied the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Purport. By His Divine Grace, A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami Prabhupada. What was possible for Dhruva Maharaj is possible for anyone. Any five-year-old child can be trained, and within a very short time his life will become successful by realization of Krishna consciousness. Unfortunately, this training is lacking all over the world. It is necessary for the leaders of the Krishna consciousness movement to start educational institutions in different parts of the world to train children starting at the age of 5 years old. Thus, children will not become hippies or spoiled children of society. Rather, they can all become devotees of the Lord. The face of the world will then change automatically. Nanda and Sunanda are two of the personal servants of Lord Vishnu from the Vaikuntha world. By the will of the Lord, they were dispatched to this material planet in order to carry Dhruva Maharaj back to Godhead. Yesterday we have read how when they approached Dhruva Maharaj on their spiritual airplane, they were smiling upon him, very satisfied to see that Dhruva Maharaj had perfected his life. There is nothing that makes a devotee happier than seeing someone else receiving the mercy of the Lord. They cannot hear. Please make the sound better. The speaker is not working. Can you explain to these people? Hare Krishna. Now, all right? Hare Krishna. Is it better? No? this particular speaker must be turned up. Mataji, you cannot hear? It's not working? Better? Hare Krishna. How Suta Goswami spoke to 80,000 rishis for 7 days without a sound system. This is transcendental potency. Actually, Srila Prabhupada explained, modern technology is just to somehow make up for the diminishment of the powers of human beings. Now we have these computers, we think, oh, such advancement of civilization. But previous to the age of Kali, every man and woman's brains were more precisely functioning than a computer. The memory bank of a human being's brain was better than all these big high-cost computers. But because our brains and our memories have diminished so much due to the age of Kali and to unregulated living, therefore we have to make tape recorders. We have to write. We have to printing presses, computers, just to remember. This is actually the sign of the downfall of humanity. Now we have so many very high technical sound systems, but previously people had such power, they could speak as loudly as they wanted to, as long as they wanted to. Now we have airplanes. People like Kardama Muni, they just chanted a mantra and could go anywhere. So civilization becomes degraded the more it becomes situated on the gross platform. See, in the times where people had higher consciousness, people were more subtle. They had more subtle powers. And therefore people were actually considered attractive on the basis of subtle particulars. Now things are so gross. In Vaikuntha, the spiritual world, it is explained there's no need for a sun and a moon. Even these are gross objects to give off light and heat. In the spiritual world, everyone's body is so much situated in Shuddha Sattva that everything emanates its own beautiful light. It's self-luminous. But our bodies are not like this. Even Miss India, if you turn off the lights, you don't even know she's there. is not real beauty. The beauty of the spiritual world. There's no need for lights. People's beauty is emanating. So Sunanda and Nanda have come to bring Dhruva Maharaj back to this world of Vaikuntha. And they are so happy. The devotee is paradukaduki. This means his distress is seeing another person's distress. Which means naturally that his greatest happiness is to see other people happy. And a person with elevated consciousness understands what is real happiness. With the vision based on true knowledge, he understands what is actually happiness. We see in Navadvip, prior to the advent of Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, great personalities like Sri Advaita Prabhu, Sri Vas Prabhu, Thakur Haridas, they were crying in great anguish to see the condition of the people of Navadvip. People were very wealthy. The city was a magnificent city. People were very learned. People had strong, healthy bodies. And people really thought they were happy. They were enjoying big, big, costly marriages and parties. So why the devotees were weeping? They thought that they were happy. They had material opulence, and they were enjoying them. But the devotees understood that this is not real happiness. It is just the opposite. Yehi samasparashaca bhoga dukha jonaya evate. Material happiness without Krishna is the source of suffering. You become attached. Everything is temporary. Dukalayam ashashvatam. It will be taken away. Then you have to suffer. A person who sees not just the superficial appearance of a particular phenomenon, but looks within it, looks to see what will be the future, what is actually inside, that person sees properly. So many people are selling medicines. You can put anything in a capsule and say, this is nice medicine. Unless you know what's inside, you really don't know what the substance is. So material life is very much concerned with the cover of the book. Expert selling has a lot to do with expert packaging. Yes? It's like you can put 3 ounces of some food product in a box that's 7 inches in size, height, and you could put 3 ounces in a box that's 12 inches high. And foolish people will buy one because they think there's more in it, but it's actually the same quantity. So material life is very much expert at packaging a very, very bad product. The product is sense gratification through this body, through the senses, through the mind. And the sense objects, they are packaged in such a way by Maya that they appear that they'll give us happiness. But actually they become the very cause of our frustration. Shreyas Prayas. A foolish child will think, if I play all day, I'll be happy for the rest of my life. And the parent will think, if I send the child to school, the child will be happier for the rest of his or her life. Why? Because from the external appearance, school is not enjoyable at all. School means austerity. Children like to play. So the parent thinks the child is foolish. But where do they get their foolish from? By watching their parents. Because they're even more foolish than the children. They're engaging in so many temporary material activities for sense gratification, or to facilitate sense gratification. And they're growing old. They're not really happy now, and at the time of death, they'll be lost. So therefore, the devotees of Srinavadvipa, they were weeping to see the opulence, the prestige, and all the various forms of enjoyment that the people were apparently satisfied enjoying. When a devotee sees another person pleasing Krishna, that is their greatest satisfaction. Because they know this is actually real enjoyment. The exploitation of this world is the cause of bondage and pain. Prahlad Maharaj was only a 5-year-old child. But because he learned at a very early age from his Gurudev, Sri Narada Muni, he had such wisdom. He explained that the whole world is mad after sex life. All species of life are just crazy to somehow, either subtle or gross, enjoy sex. The whole world is basically influenced on this one point. Wherever you go, we find this is the target of people's consciousness. The little 5-year-old Prahlad, he could see right through it. He's just told it like it is. He said, what is this sex? The enjoyment of this particular activity is scratching the itch of a rash. If you have a rash on your body, not a pleasurable thing. It's a miserable thing. It causes frustration. And you think that you'll be satisfied by scratching it. And actually, scratching it does satisfy it. How many of you have had rash? Even mosquito bite. Doesn't it feel nice when you scratch it? Very relieving. But what happens when you scratch it? You aggravate it. And then the itching is more intensified. The more you scratch, the more intensified you have to suffer. It's endless. If you want to cure a rash, you have to stop scratching it and put the proper medication on it. Well, similarly, if we want to stop the burning itching, which is the cause of all anxieties in this world, then we have to stop scratching it. That's what the whole Varnashram institution is meant to do, to stop scratching the itches. Brahmacharis, their hands are tied behind their backs. They can't scratch. Vanaprastas, not exactly tied behind their backs, but somehow they can't scratch either. And sannyasis, they have their hands cut off. They can never scratch again. And grihasthas, they're allowed at the most once a month or so to just scratch it a little. Gradually it's going to get better if you do it less. So the whole system is meant to stop scratching the itch. But at the same time, there has to be medication to actually heal the root cause. There may be some disease in your blood that's causing these rashes. So stopping the scratching will stop it from being further aggravated, which will make it incurable. But at the same time, we have to go to the root cause. What is the root cause of all the itches of material desire? It's the bodily conception of life. We have forgotten the eternal blissful nature of the soul. Anandamayo vyashat. We're all pleasure seeking because we're all part of Krishna. Nitya siddha Krishna prema sajya kabunoi sravanadi sudicheti kuriya yutoi. Love of God is within us. It's that love that we're looking for. That is what gives pleasure. Therefore, Mahaprabhu came for the medicine that actually awakens our real healthy condition and cures the disease at the very root cause of forgetfulness. Enechi anshadi maya nashi parulagi harina mahamantra lauti. Mahaprabhu came with this medicine. Prabhupada said it is the panacea cure for all disease. For the disease of birth, death, old age, and disease. Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, he distributed this medicine freely to all. He has invited us all. Be happy. Chant the holy name. Seeing devotees chanting the holy names and becoming actually purified, that makes devotees happy. Narada Muni wrote, Bhaktivinod Thakur wrote a beautiful song about Narada Muni. Narada Muni bhajai bina Radhika Ramana name. He's traveling everywhere, inducing people to chant the holy names of Radhika Raman. And he explained about the type of kirtan Narada Muni was inducing, where the demigods were dancing and all the people of the world were dancing and everyone was chanting and crying in ecstasy. And Bhaktivinoda Thakur says, seeing this, I am very happy. Yes? This is what gives happiness to a devotee. Such fulfillment. There is no type of materialistic entertainment that can possibly compare when a devotee sees conditioned souls with their arms raised loudly chanting the holy name. Recently I was speaking to one nice devotee, Yajna Purusha Prabhu, disciple of His Holiness Niranjan Swami Maharaj. He's president of the Bhaktivedanta Ashram in Manhattan Island, in New York City. And he was explaining how there was this Harinam Sankirtan. There was a large group of devotees that performed Harinam Sankirtan, and they went to 42nd Street and Broadway, which is Times Square, really the heart of sinfulness in this in this very sinful city of New York. Times Square is famous for pornography and horse race betting and all kinds of meat eating and unbelievable amount of intoxication, alcohol, drugs, and just mad fever for material enjoyment. Close by is all, you know, 42nd and Broadway. Broadway is all these theaters and movies and drama houses. People are just infatuated with material enjoyment, especially at night, because the desire for material enjoyment and the modes of ignorance very much increase as the sun goes down, down, and at night. Some people really like to engage in sinful activities. Yes? So these devotees had Harinam Kirtan. They were these intoxicated people. It was on a Saturday night. I think it was New Year's Eve. These people, when they saw the devotees dancing and chanting down the streets, they were thinking that these people are really intoxicated. The devotees were, but the difference is their intoxication was just emanating such joy. And their intoxication was not emanating joy from the heart. Quite the opposite. So there were actually hundreds of people, intoxicated, karmic people, who just became so swept away by the enthusiasm of the devotees chanting that hundreds of them were dancing in the streets of New York with their arms raised, with gigantic smiles on their faces, loudly chanting the holy name. And who is the happiest? The devotees, seeing this. The devotees, their hearts were erupting with volcanic conditions of bliss to see these materialistic people finding joy in chanting the holy names. The kirtan was going to higher and higher levels of enthusiastic devotion. They couldn't stop talking about it. They couldn't even go to sleep that night. They went back to 22nd Avenue after hours and hours and hours of kirtan just talking about what a blissful night it was. Even weeks later, they were calling me, and they could hardly talk properly. They were just so excited about what they saw. Yes, Radha Kun Prabhu, you have these experiences. There's nothing more wonderful than seeing other people tasting Krishna. The preacher's dream. So this is actually happiness. But somehow or other, familiarity sometimes breeds contempt. We're blissful when we see materialistic drunkards chanting and finding joy with Krishna. But when devotees who are trying to dedicate their lives get some special mercy or become very pleased by the mercy of Krishna, then sometimes our tendency is we become envious of them. But according to Sri Chaitanya Charitamrita, the actual test of how one is becoming a Vaishnava is how much a person feels joy when another devotee is pleasing Krishna and getting special mercy. We can test ourselves. We can check ourselves. Are we egoistic? Are we selfish? Do we want it for ourselves? Or are we happy when we see that mercy is coming upon others? And actually, When we see, when we feel happiness, seeing another person pleasing Krishna, Krishna will be most pleased with us. When we feel joy in our heart to see another Vaishnava getting the mercy of Krishna, special mercy, that joy is so pleasing to Krishna that he will give you his special mercy. And if you feel sad or envious that someone else is getting special mercy, I want it for myself, Krishna will withdraw it and give you nothing. Krishna reciprocates as we approach him. But this is a very subtle subject. We must understand the scriptures very nicely. Like 42nd Street and Broadway on New Year's Eve, Yajna Purusha Prabhu's story, I was thinking this is practically identical to the full moon eclipse in Falgun, Gaur Purnima. Due to the eclipse, all kinds of materialistic, envious, mundane wranglers were in the Ganges loudly chanting the holy names of Hari, and the devotees were in bliss. Devotees were praying, let this eclipse last forever, because otherwise these people will never chant the holy names. They were praying to Krishna day and night, please make me my pundit, a devotee, because if he becomes a devotee, he has such power, such attraction and influence that he can induce everyone to chant the names of God. And we find whenever the Lord would bestow special mercy on a particular devotee, all the other devotees were ecstatic. This is the continuous theme of Sri Chaitanya Charitamrita and Sri Chaitanya Bhagavata. The Lord gives mercy to the devotees and everyone around becomes ecstatic to see. King Prataparudra, the Lord manifested his opulences of Krishna to King Prataparudra. He allowed the king to massage his feet. He embraced the king and soaked him with the tears of his love. All the other devotees were not getting that privilege. Even devotees who dedicated their life. Haridas Thakur, he was beaten in 22 marketplaces. He was tested in so many ways. He remained firm and loyal to his service to Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. He wasn't thinking, look at all I have done. Why the Lord is bracing King Prataparudra? What did he ever do compared to me? No. He was leaping in ecstasy with tears of ecstasy in his eyes, seeing King Prataparudra getting mercy. This is Vaishnava. When another person's happiness is our happiness, when another person's distress is our distress, when Krishna sees that we have this type of consciousness, then he gives us his full mercy. Because the spirit of being a servant is a very, very deep subject matter. Being servant of the servant of the servant isn't simply a matter of washing someone's clothes every now and then, or picking up their plate and grabbing it from them and forcibly washing it. Those things we can do. But actually, servant of the servant of the servant is something very profound. It means to actually be a person's well-wisher from your heart. Not only in your actions, not only in your words, but in your heart. You're really a person's well-wisher. You really want the best for them. Not up to a certain limit where the person may approach my position. Sometimes we're well-wishers to a person up until they come to our position. Then we become their competitor. It is said that no one is equal to or greater than Krishna. We should never want to think that no one should be equal to or greater than me. We should feel ourselves insignificant. Servant of the servant of the servant really means serving another as the real well-wisher. Now let us examine, what does it mean to be a well-wisher? In materialistic life, people who are in the darkness of ignorance, they think that being a well-wisher is simply some nice arrangement in this material world where a person will find stability and enjoyment. Good education, good health. This is also well-wishing. But a real well-wisher is one who wishes that you please Krishna. Because all the treasures of the spiritual world, all the happiness of the soul is dependent on to what extent you please Krishna. So a devotee who is really a well-wisher finds the greatest satisfaction when they see that someone is pleasing Krishna. Because as you please Krishna, Krishna bestows his mercy upon you. And that mercy can free you from all suffering and give you transcendental happiness. There's no other way. Harinama, 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 Eva Kevalam, Kalona, Steva, Nasteva, Nasteva, Gatiranjata. Knowing that the holy name is the only means of attaining the ultimate perfection in this age of Kali, devotees' greatest happiness is seeing others taking shelter of the holy name. Yasya prasada bhagavat prasado yasya prasada nagati. When one gets the mercy of Guru, that is the mercy of Krishna. So when people see that someone is pleasing Guru, pleasing Vaishnavas, doing wonderful things, Vaishnava is pleased to see that, most pleased to see that. Srila Prabhupada would sometimes say that he was praying to Radha Krishna that all of his disciples become better than him. He wanted his disciples to spread Krishna consciousness all over the world, even greater than he did. Of course, if a disciple ever thinks that they are better than the spiritual master, then Krishna will not tolerate such arrogance. But the spiritual master, he's such a well-wisher. He wants everyone to do better. When Srila Prabhupada first started the International Society for Krishna Consciousness, he gave his blood, sweat, tears, everything to establish this mission. Then he invited godbrothers who were just sitting in India, come, you be the president. You be in charge. He wasn't concerned with his own name and fame. He would like to see everyone get the credit, but they had to do the work. Nobody wanted to do the work. So Prabhupada had to struggle alone. So this is the spirit of Vaishnavism. Prabhupada specifically says, this is a Vaishnava. One who feels joy to see another person being empowered by Krishna, by the mercy of Krishna. Not a person who is envious or who wants that satisfaction for themselves. This verse that we have read is very significant because Nanda and Sunanda, thinking of the life of Dhruva Maharaj and how he pleased the Lord, they are smiling happily. And Dhruva Maharaj He's bowing down with great humility to these devotees. Dhruva Maharaj has been sitting on the throne of the planet Earth for over 30,000 years. When you sit on a throne as king of the world, many people honor and respect you. Today, people who are the leaders of one particular country are to some extent honored and respected. But because there's so many political parties, so many people are attacking them. But Dhruva Maharaj was a monarch. There were no political parties. During the time of Dhruva Maharaj, there was no Democratic Party or Republican Party. There was no Congress or Janta Dal or BJPs or Shiv Sains. There was none of these rival parties. Everyone loved you. Everyone supported you. Unanimously. And there was no way you would ever be taken out of your office until by your own sweet will you retired. And then guaranteed, you can choose who you give the next position of king to. That was the power of a king. So sometimes when people get power, what is that saying? Absolute power. Absolute power corrupts absolutely. Yes? That's the material conception, because we have this fever. We want to control. We want to be adored, respected. And the more we get it, it's like scratching the itch. Back to the itch philosophy. The more, if you're lusty for reputation, for prestige, it's like a rash. It's subtle sex life, according to Shastra. Profit, adoration, and distinction. So the more people glorify you and honor you and give you high positions and different types of awards and garlands, and they're just scratching that itch. Scratching the rash. And the more prestige you need, the more honor you need, the more respect you need, the more power you need. Look at these conquerors of the world. Napoleon was not satisfied conquering France. Hitler was not satisfied conquering Germany. Conquered all the cities, everywhere around Germany. Then he went to Russia. Then he was aiming at America. He was aiming at England. Alexander the Great. He traveled across Asia, conquering one kingdom after another. Why? And here on Hiranyakashipu, he conquered the entire universe. And we read in Bhagavatam what kind of a scratching his itching was causing him. Conquered the entire universe, and one little five-year-old boy, who was his own son, didn't agree with his supreme opinion, and he was just totally out of control. So every type of gross and subtle sense gratification is just scratching a horrible rash. And the more you have, the more you need. So absolute power corrupts absolutely, unless you're a devotee. Because a devotee doesn't have the illusion that the power is mine. A devotee understands everything is Krishna. I'm just the servant of the servant of the servant. Dhruva Maharaj was the king of the world. When Kuvera offered him a benediction, the only thing he wanted is, please let me never forget Krishna. Let me always be the servant of the servant of his servants. He didn't think it was his power. He understood it was all Krishna's power. Then therefore there was no corruption. Dhruva Maharaj's position is so incredible. Here he is, the king of the planet, such a great personality. Had the darshan of the Lord at 5 years old. And yet, when Nanda and Sunanda came with genuine humility in his heart, he bowed down with folded palms to them. Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu gave this information that a person who is actually decorated with good qualities will behave in the same way as a tree that is decorated with good ripe fruits. A tree that is filled with ripe fruits at all times, in all places, in all circumstances, bows down very low to everyone. A tree that has no real fruits stands up with its head very straight. Similarly, a person who's actually decorated with divine qualities, that person's head is bowed down in humility at all times, in all places, in all circumstances, to all people. Competitive in an egoistic way. Amara Jivan, Thakur Bhaktivinod, in his incredible humility, is expressing the basic state of consciousness of a materialistic people. Every person I've ever explained this song to, every devotee, they all say the same thing. This is me. This is exactly the way I feel. But a devotee can't admit it. There's a certain pride. You may say, I am the most fallen. No one is more fallen than me. If you think you're more fallen than me, then you are in ignorance, because I'm the most fallen. So therefore, you should understand that I'm the most advanced. If I think I'm the most fallen, I'm the most advanced. So you must understand this principle philosophically. But to actually come right out and admit what's really in your heart, very few devotees are willing to do that. But Bhakti Vinod, he's just pouring out the humility of his heart, and by doing so, he's exposing the condition of every fallen soul in this world. You show that song to a materialist, and they just can't understand what kind of psychological damage did his parents do to him when he was laying in the cradle. He must have had a brother that kept pinching him and biting him when he was just a little baby before he learned how to walk. Huh? They can't understand. How could anyone want to feel like this? But yet, when devotees hear Bhaktivinoda Thakur's prayers, Amara Jivan, they weep that this is me. Such a simple, pure, honest person. He's just revealing his heart. Not just to one or two close friends. He's publishing it. And it's being translated in languages all over the world. In every continent, people are reading and singing Amara Jivan. But as we do, our ultimate love, respect, and adoration for Thakur Bhaktivinoda grows.
This is a great soul. Real greatness is not in possession, prestige, or power. Real greatness is in humility and compassion.
Rupa and Sanatan Goswami, when they were the chief ministers of the entire kingdom of Bengal in Ramkeli, handsome, young, beautiful, wealthy, learned, but even the most insignificant guest that would come into their assembly house, they would get off their seats, bow down to them with folded hands, and personally serve them. This is their greatness. The greatness of such personalities that lives forever was not that they had high positions, but that they had such high virtues. So Dhruva Maharaj is bowing down, and Nanda and Sunanda, they are so happy. They're just so happy to see the humility of Dhruva Maharaj. They're just in total ecstasy to think of how this Dhruva Maharaj pleased the Lord and how he has perfected his life. And in this verse that we are reading today, Sunanda and Nanda are speaking in glorification of Dhruva Maharaj. Let there be all good fortune unto you. These words show what is a Vaishnava. This is their prayer. Let there be all good fortune unto you. This is how a true devotee thinks toward everyone. We are praying all good fortune. Lakshmi Devi is the goddess of fortune. And what is her fortune? During Diwali, here in India, people do Lakshmi Puja. Usually Lakshmi Puja is performed in the office. Yes? Is that the tradition? It's more serious puja in the office than at home. That is what I have seen. Deepavali. And what are they asking Lakshmi for? Fortune! And what is their idea of fortune? Money, prestige, power, enjoyment, facilities for enjoyment. However, Lakshmi Devi, she's the goddess who presides over all that, but she never touches it herself. She has to expand herself in another form as Durga to give those things. She herself, she only has one fortune, serving the lotus feet of Lord Narayan. Lakshmi is just sitting, massaging those lotus feet, padasevanam, serving the lotus feet of the Lord. That is her treasure. And she will not leave that service for any type of facility in this material world. So why don't we wake up to the reality? We're worshipping Lakshmi for fortune. Why don't we try to understand, what is her opinion of fortune? We're asking her for things that she can't even tolerate. We're asking her for things that are despicable to her, that she has no interest in. Real fortune is the desire to serve the lotus feet of the Lord.
So when devotees pray that a person gets all good fortune, that means they pray that that person will be given bhakti, devotion. Devotion is the only good fortune that can survive the deteriorating effects of time. Bhakti is the only fortune that can bring real happiness to the heart. Premaniti. Real wealth, real fortune, real treasure is in love. Love for Krishna. So this is the benediction devotees give. Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, when he met Mayavadis, Sarvabhauma Bhattacharya, he offered his obeisances. Om Namo Narayanaya, my obeisances to you, Lord Narayan. Because the idea is when you take sannyas, when you give up this material world, then you become one with Narayan. And Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, he replied, Krishne Matir Astu, which means, may you remember Krishna. And Sarvabhauma Bhattacharya, just by that one line, could understand everything about Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu's path of perfection. He said, I could understand he is a Vaishnava. He is thinking he is part and parcel of the Supreme Lord. He's the eternal servant of Krishna. So this was Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu's, his well-wishing blessing. Krishne Matir Astu. May you remember Krishna. Because in remembering Krishna, we have all good fortune. Krishna is the husband of the goddess of fortune. Krishna is the treasure of the goddess of fortune. And devotion to Krishna, by remembering Krishna with love, that is where, that consciousness is where Vishnu or Krishna is eternally residing. Sadhunam hridayam mayam, sadhunam hridayam vaham. The Lord says, I'm always residing in the heart of my devotee. Why? Because my devotee is always remembering me with love. Krishna's Bhagavan, Aishwaryasya Samagrasya Viryasya Yashashashriya, he possesses all six opulences. Wherever is Krishna is all fortune. Krishna always resides where there is love and devotion. Tatra tishtami narada yatra gayanti madbhakta. Krishna never leaves that place where his devotees are gathered together in love and devotion, chanting his holy name. These are the opening words. Let there be all good fortune unto you. That means may you always remember Krishna with ecstatic, pure love and devotion. Please attentively hear what we shall say. When you were only 5 years old, you underwent severe austerities, and you thereby greatly satisfied the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Now when we read Srimad Bhagavatam, it is a very, very great history. This is not what is called mythology. Srimad Bhagavatam is not just some literary symbolism that was composed by very deep thinking poets. Srimad Bhagavatam is factual history. But the profoundness of this history is beyond any other history in this world. Because the great historian, Shukadev Goswami, he has learned this from Vedavyas, who's the literary incarnation of Godhead. He's taking the most important histories from different yugas, from different millenniums, from different planets, from different universes, to give the most essential, important presentation of how every living being can perfect their lives. When we're studying Srimad Bhagavatam, we shouldn't just, like a student in a classroom, trying to understand its historical or its academic content. Actually, in today's world, in order to be a great and noble scholar in the Academy of Learning, one of the most important qualifications is objectivity. That you don't analyze things subjectively, but objectively. That means you really, in order to be objective, you have to put aside your own desires, your own goals, your own perceptions. You just see it as it is. And you explain it in such a way. Detached. We have met very famous and learned theologians in the Academic Academy. And they will, some of them study student or professors of religion, Eastern religion. They have such immense knowledge of subjects. There's people who know practically the Bhagavatam, the Chaitanya Charitamrita, and the books of Rupa and Sanatan by heart. But it's completely objective. They have no faith. It doesn't inspire them to practice. And they're considered such great scholars because of their objectivity. I have told you before, I was preaching in one place, university in the southern parts of America, and the head of the religion department, he was such a scholar of the Christian religion. He knew it by memory practically, the Old Testament, the New Testament. And all the churches in that entire tri-state area were inviting him as the special guest to give sermons on Sunday. And what incredible sermons he would give. He would have people enthralled. He just knew the subject as a master. And his power of oration was so exciting, so stimulating. People just honored him as a great saint. He wrote many textbooks. So many students were coming. He was helping them to get master's degrees, even PhDs. Anyways, I was speaking in his classes and in the university. In order to speak in any of these universities, you have to get the permission of this professor. And the whole time he was trying to convince me that Jesus is the way, the truth, and the light, and there is no way to the Father except through Jesus. Trying to prove to me, according to the Old Testament and the New Testament, that idol worship is not bona fide. That any names of God that you can speak or you can say are not the true name of God. That Jesus is the Lamb of God. He sacrificed his life for the sins of all living beings. And if you don't accept him, then you're simply an offender and you have to go to hell for all eternity. And when he preached this, it was very intense. He had so many quotes and such logic, and he was a philosopher. Anyways, by Srila Prabhupada's mercy, I was just a new devotee. I was only a devotee for a few years. It was one of my first preaching engagements. And yet, just by studying Bhagavad Gita as it is, I could defeat everything he was saying. He was big, big PhD, about 60 years old. I was in my 20s. For 5 days, hours a day, between classes, after classes, he was trying to convert me. But finally, when he saw there is no way in the 14 planetary systems that I can possibly convert this boy to believe what I'm saying, then he actually became honest with me. He said, actually, to tell you the truth, I don't even believe there's a God. He said, I don't even believe there ever really was a Jesus Christ. I was in culture shock when he said this. I said, you don't believe this? He said, no. He said, what evidence is there? What proof? It's only these literatures. I said, well, if you don't believe it, then why everyone's honoring you as a great saint when inviting you to give talks in their churches and inspiring them in their devotion? He said, it's my occupation. So what about all the books you've written? He said, it's my occupation. But what about all the things you've been telling me? He said, it's my entertainment to try to defeat you. But actually, I don't believe a word I say. And then he was saying, actually, this is my greatness, that I can be objective. I can know the subject without being affected by the subject. So I requested him. So my request is you objectively chant this Hare Krishna Maha Mantra. Other words, what kind of scholar are you if due to your subjective conclusions, you're closing your minds to another academic field of study, Gaudiya Vaishnavism? So do you chant? So the next class he was chanting. Hari Bol. Interesting enough, his name was Professor Maybe. You know, just like Srimad Bhagavatam, usually a person's names very much are reflective of their qualities they have, like Dhruva. Dhruva means like determination, right? So his name was Professor Maybe. Maybe this, maybe that, I don't know, nobody knows. So Srimad Bhagavatam is not an academic study. Every page of Srimad Bhagavatam is to be understood how it is meant to influence and affect my life. Now, it's a beautiful story we tell our children. How little Dhruva went to the forest at 5 years old, and there were lions and tigers and snakes and mosquitoes, and he just didn't care anything for any of them. He wasn't running and hiding behind trees looking for lions. He just walked right by them. They were there. He just walked right by. I'm looking for Krishna. I'm finding Krishna. And Krishna protected him because he had such faith, such determination. When he was only a 5-year-old child, he met his guru, Narada Muni. And he was trained up by his guru at that age of 5. And he took the words of his spiritual master as his life and soul. Vyavashayatmaka budhir ekeha kudu nandana bahushakahyanandashta budhayo vyavashayanam. He was resolute in purpose. His aim was one. What my Gurudev has told me, I will do it. And he did it. Srila Prabhupada, his commentaries of Srimad Bhagavatam bring it to life for all of us. Actually, all the 18,000 slokas of the Bhagavatam are 18,000 highly potent transcendental seeds. Bhakti Siddhanta Saraswati Thakur said, any word, any syllable of Srimad Bhagavatam, if you understand its true content, can awaken the highest perfection of love of God within your heart. What does that mean? Every syllable is a seed. And within that seed is all the knowledge, all the glory, all the realizations of Krishna in the spiritual world. Thus, so many great commentators amongst our beloved acharyas, they have expanded, they have drawn out from those seeds. Unless you hear Srimad Bhagavatam from a person, Bhagavatam, you cannot understand what it is. You just see all these seeds. You hear all these narrations, but you don't really understand the content within it. Sri Chaitanya Charitamrita. There was a devotee who was a very, very learned, austere, pious person. He wanted to present to Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu some poetry on the basis of Srimad Bhagavatam. But it was when Swarup Damodar Goswami heard what he was saying, he told him, you're going to hell for this offense. You have misunderstood and you're promoting an illusion. He explained, the only possibility that anyone can understand Srimad Bhagavatam is by hearing from a person Bhagavatam. And we see it practically even in today's life. There are many very, very famous, powerful speakers of Srimad Bhagavatam doing Bhagavat Saptaha, Bhagavat Katha. But Prabhupada would not encourage us to listen to any of them unless they were actually Vaishnavism parampara. Otherwise, we can see their conclusions of the Bhagavatam were contrary to the true Siddhanta. They can speak in such a way where people will cry, people will tremble, people will laugh. People will be totally absorbed for 7 days, 3 hours morning, 3 hours evenings. And in the end, everyone thinks that I'm becoming God. Their own conclusion is that ultimately the impersonal light of Brahman is the ultimate destination, and through all paths you can attain that light. And bhakti is one of these paths, so we are discussing bhakti. You cannot understand Srimad Bhagavatam through scholarship, through research, through austerities, through penances. It is only possible by hearing from a person Bhagavatam. That's the first message of the Bhagavatam itself. Shukadev Goswami heard from Vyasadeva. Vyasadeva heard from Narada Muni. Narada Muni heard from Brahma. Brahma heard from Krishna. Suta Goswami heard from Shukadev Goswami. These are great spiritual masters who heard the subject from great spiritual masters and learned it properly, and therefore they were qualified to speak. Parikshit Maharaj, Sonak Rishi, and the sages of Naimisharanya, they were humble, they recognized this person's qualification, and they were eager to hear and eager to apply the message to their lives. Because there was a bona fide hearer and a bona fide speaker, the effects of Srimad Bhagavatam could actually take place, which is what? To establish irrevocable, unconditional, uninterrupted, loving, devotional service to the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Dharma projita kaitavatra parama nirmatsaranam satam. Bhagavatam kicks out all sub-religious principles from the very beginning. But yet so many people are speaking Bhagavatam all over the world, all about sub-religious principles. The Bhagavatam is the postgraduate study of Bhagavad Gita. The conclusion of Gita is Sarva Dharman Parityajya Mam Ekam Sharanam Braja Aham Tvam Sarva Papibhyo Moksha Ishami Master. Abandon all varieties of religion and just surrender to me. I shall deliver you from all sinful reactions. Do not fear. That is Gita. How? Manmana bhava mad bhakto. By always remembering me, by becoming my devotee. So Srimad Bhagavatam begins from the point where Bhagavad Gita ends. Surrender to Krishna. And it describes the nature of such surrender and the various levels of intimacy and ras within the spirit of surrender through factual histories. The most intimate, loving reciprocations between the Lord and His devotees. How a devotee of the Lord surrenders and takes shelter of the Lord blissfully, even in the face of the most difficult, torturous obstacles of material life. And how the Lord always protects and awards the love of His devotee. That is the subject of Bhagavatam. So Dhruva Maharaj, when he was just a child of 5 years old, he heard the words of Narada Muni. In certain ways, he was similar to Arjuna. Arjuna was in a very, very upset state of consciousness when Krishna spoke Gita. He was desperate for knowledge. Similarly, Dhruva Maharaj, he was desperate. He was desperate. He was in very, very disturbed state. He had to see Krishna somehow. Teach me. We find where there's the greatest transmission of transcendental knowledge, there is the bona fide speaker and there's the hearer who actually takes the subject very, very seriously. Not just as a matter of academic study or curiosity. It's not that I'm trying to hear so that I can impress others by how I can repeat what I hear. All these fine little tricky details that nobody's ever heard before. I'll tell people this and they'll think I'm very, very nice. This was not the mood that Dhruva Maharaj, Arjuna, or Parikshit Maharaj were hearing the Shastras. They were desperate. They felt a great need, like a starving person will drink a glass of water to save their life. That's how they were listening to Srimad Bhagavatam, Bhagavad Gita. Where there's a sense of necessity, of urgency, there's the greatest attention. A person who's walking on a tightrope is not thinking in terms of, I wonder what television show is on tomorrow night. And the person who's walking on the tightrope is fully fixed with his entire concentration on that rope. Because if his mind deviates, his body deviates. If his body deviates, he dies immediately. It's concentration. Concentration because of necessity. So we have to have this sense of necessity. That's why it's so important to hear in the association of devotees. Some people, when they discuss Srimad Bhagavatam, they discuss so many sweet, enjoyable leelas, and everybody's laughing. Ha, 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 ha. Very nice. Krishna is so nice. Krishna is so nice. But actually, for that subject to really go in our heart, we have to understand the miseries of material life, the dangers of the world we live in, and what an unpredictable, vulnerable situation we're in, where we're coming from, where we may be going. Unless we understand the miseries of the material world and our predicament in this material world, unless we're convinced of that, then we can't really hear the message of Krishna's pastimes in a sense of urgency. Sukadeva Goswami spoke the five chapters of Rasalila to Maharaj Pariksit. He was a man who was about to die. By the time that chapter of Bhagavad Gita, Srimad Bhagavatam was being spoken, Pariksit Maharaj probably only had about a day and a half left to live. It's actually interesting to think in this way, that Srimad Bhagavatam began first canto, philosophy. Beginning of Bhagavatam is simply philosophy. Begins, that's the feet of the Lord. That was when Pariksit Maharaj had 7 days to live. He was desperately, urgently hearing that message. And by the time you get to the smiling face, the 10th canto, by that time Pariksit Maharaj only has about a day more to live. So as the subject matter becomes more elevated, the intense urgency is becoming greater and greater and greater. You think Pariksit Maharaj, when he was hearing Rasalila, he was just laughing, going, oh, very nice, Krishna, so nice. He was listening. This is, my life depends on understanding the transcendental nature of Krishna's appearance and activities in this world. Let my entire heart and soul be surrendered unto the Lord, who's so merciful to his devotees. He was qualified to hear because he had the proper state of consciousness. Any way you hear, there will be some purification. But to the degree we have this sense of deep, intense necessity, that I have to hear it. My life depends on it. I must understand these things. I must surrender. That is actual hearing. So sometimes reversals come in our life. Tragedies, confusions, things that may even seem outright unfair. Why is this happening to me? It's the nature of the world. It's going to happen to everyone in due course of time. The basic principle of material existence is to suffer. Birth, old age, disease, and death. Death of a loved one causes suffering. The fear of death to ourself causes suffering. Old age is full of suffering. Birth is suffering. Children don't come out of the womb clapping their hands and laughing. They come out weeping, crying. Ah! And the louder they cry, the healthier they're supposed to be. Yes? I don't know that authoritatively. I heard that. But they come out crying. So birth is not pleasing. Old age is not pleasing. Disease is not pleasing. Death is not pleasing. But yet, everyone has to go through all of these things in one way or another in this world. So when a devotee sees this kind of a situation and experiences this situation, devotee takes something that is materially considered negative and makes it positive. It is said, vision is the art of seeing the invisible. And this is even a materialistic sense of leadership. Because what nobody else sees can possibly happen, a visionary is seeing. And in the spiritual circle, what appears to be a crisis is a benediction. The inevitability of material existence is going to go on, and it will always go on in this material world. But how do we perceive it? If the difficulties, the tragedies, the problems, the obstacles that we undergo in life, if they help us to actually become desperate to hear the message of Vasudeva, if we actually become, I need the association of devotees, I need the name of Krishna, I need to understand and hear Srimad Bhagavatam, it's life or death, then we're actually qualified to really imbibe the message in our hearts, not just with our brains. Srimad Bhagavatam is spoken from the heart to the heart. So Parikshit Maharaj, 7 days to live. He was hearing Krishna's Leela with at the most 1 or 1.5 days to live. Arjuna was practically on the verge of death and frustration and confusion. That's how he heard Bhagavad Gita. And Dhruva Maharaj, he was in a condition worse than death. For a Kshatriya, Krishna says, dishonor is worse than death. Dhruva was dishonored terribly. If some strange enemy from another kingdom dishonors you, it hurts a little. But when your own father, who you're depending on in your life, for stability, for shelter, and for love, when he dishonors you, unbearable. Dhruva Maharaj could not have suffered worse. He was weeping. He was trembling. His limbs were just trembling uncontrollably. He couldn't tolerate the pangs that was inflicted within his heart. And he approached a devotee, his mother. And she said, only Krishna can save you. Mother admitted, she was a good mother. The mother didn't say, oh, I will protect you. The mother admitted, I can't save you from this catastrophe. Only Krishna can save you. I can only tell you how to find Krishna. That's a parent. No parent can save the child from death. No parent can save the child from the inevitable karmic sufferings that it's destined to undergo. But the parent can give the child the shelter of Krishna, and then the child will be eternally saved forever. So this was Sunditi. Go to the forest, find Krishna. So he went. And it was in this condition of total desperate need that he heard from Narada Muni. And he took that message seriously as his life and soul. Srila Prabhupada brings real light to the Bhagavad. He's explaining in this beautiful purport, and please listen carefully. If you understand this one line of Prabhupada's purport, your life will never be the same again. Prabhupada says, what was possible for Dhruva Maharaj is possible for anyone. This is Srimad Bhagavatam. Not just an academic historical study of some things in the past, not just a allegorical, symbolic, philosophical dissertation. Srimad Bhagavatam is meant for you. It's meant to teach you and me how to live. Whatever we read in the Bhagavatam, it's what we must understand and imbibe in our own life. It's Krishna speaking to us for our enlightenment. That is Bhagavatam. What Dhruva Maharaj did, what was possible for him, is possible for anyone. Our tendency is to think, well, Dhruva Maharaj, he's Dhruva Maharaj. I'm not Dhruva Maharaj. I was born in Illinois, or I was born in Belgaum, or I was born in Bombay, or I was born in Madras. Who am I? I had all kinds of things were going around me. And did qualitatively, according to our capacity. Dhruva Maharaj heard sincerely from his guru. We can hear sincerely from our guru. Dhruva Maharaj performed austerities to restrain his senses from sense gratification. We could do that. He gave up eating. We can eat only prasad. He gave up sleeping. We can give up excessive sleep and wake up for Mangalarti. He worshipped the deities. We could worship the deities. He was chanting the holy names constantly. We're chanting the holy names as constantly as possible. We can do. Dhruva Maharaj was remembering Krishna in the core of his heart. We can also try to remember Krishna in the core of our heart. We may not be able to just eat a few dry leaves, but we can eat prasad.
So every one of the principles that Dhruva Maharaj followed to attain perfection, Srila Prabhupada has given us. Every one. Sense gratification and Krishna consciousness go ill together. They're opposites. But Narada Muni didn't tell Dhruva Maharaj, just meditate on the tip of your nose and destroy all desires. He taught him how to engage his mind and his senses completely in Krishna's service. And it describes in the verse of yesterday that Dhruva Maharaj gradually became purified. His gradual was within a matter of 6 months. Our gradual may be within our lifetime, but to make gradual progress through the process of bhakti is exactly what we have been given. And if we are sincere, Srila Prabhupada explains, what in yesterday's purport, what was possible for Dhruva Maharaj is possible for everyone. Anyone who sincerely engages in devotional service can obtain, in due course of time, the same perfection of the human form of life. Prabhupada is repeating again and again that this story is for you. You can do it. You can follow in the footsteps of Dhruva Maharaj. The great spiritual master, Narada Muni, according to the time, place, circumstance, and the persons, Kala Desha Patra, he instructed Dhruva Maharaj. And in Parampara, Bhakti Siddhanta Saraswati Thakur, Srila Prabhupada, they are the representatives of Narada Muni, and they are explaining the same message according to our particular time, place, circumstance. So if we simply take Srila Prabhupada and our Acharya's instructions seriously, Sanda and Sunanda and Nanda will come for us, smiling, and take us back to Godhead. In one form or another, the same result will be achieved. Man manabhava mad bhakto madhya jivnam namaskuru mam evaishashi shatyam te prati jani priyoshime. Krishna says, it is my promise. You will attain me if you always remember me. I'm going to read this purport again because it is very significant. What was possible for Dhruva Maharaj is possible for anyone. Any 5-year-old child can be trained, and within a very short time his life will become successful by realization of Krishna consciousness. Unfortunately, this training is lacking all over the world. It is necessary for the leaders of the Krishna consciousness movement to start educational institutions in different parts of the world to train children, starting at the age of 5 years. Thus, such children will not become hippies or spoiled children of society. Rather, they can all become devotees of the Lord. The face of the world will then change automatically. There are many stories in Srimad Bhagavatam, some of the most popular, about small children, 5 years old. Prahlad Maharaj, Dhruva Maharaj. Why are these stories there? Prahlad told his classmates, Komara acharet pragyo dharman bhagavataniha durlabam manasanjama tad apyatruvam arthadam. From the age of 5, from the small age, Kumar, That is the time to begin training in Krishna consciousness. Prabhupada takes this opportunity. Nanda and Sunanda are glorifying Dhruva. You began the spiritual path at the age of 5. You performed austerities. Human life is meant for austerity. Real civilization is based on raising children to a very large extent. Because the children of today will be the adults and the leaders of society tomorrow. There was a famous educator in the Catholic Church who actually was establishing schools in the Catholic Church. He said, "You give me a child through 6 years old to train, I guarantee you that person will be a Catholic for the rest of their life." What we invest within children is critical for their whole life. Even according to the psychiatrists and the psychologists of modern medicinal industry today, a major part of their analysis is what happened to you when you were a child and how it affects you now. Even hypnosis is becoming acceptable. In hypnosis, people go, they ask, you know, what happened when you were 3 years old, what, 5 years old, 6 years old, and people go back and they start screaming, my brother is poking me with a knife, and my mother hit me in the face, my father wouldn't talk to me. And now the person's like a serial murderer. So much is attributed to traumas and conditions that one was exposed to when they were little children. Because it goes so deep into our consciousness. It is said that most people who abuse others are people who have been abused when they were young. Victims make other people victims. That is the world we live in. So therefore, to give children the best possible environment to live in is the duty of parents. Now, what does tapasya mean? Srila Prabhupada says, we shouldn't raise children that are spoiled. Spoiled children spoil the world. Therefore, tapasya is important. If a child thinks that he can get or she can get anything, anytime, then that child will just be conditioned for the rest of the life to expect that I will get anything, anytime. And when they grow up, they realize they're not going to have their mommy and daddy giving them everything at any time. Now, you know, I want this toy, I want that toy, I want this, and they're getting. But then as you get older, the toys become more complex that you require. And nobody can give them to you. And somehow or other, you're not getting them, therefore you're totally frustrated. Intolerable. Always in anxiety because you're not getting what you want. It's a miserable life. A happy person is a person, whether I get it or not, it doesn't matter. You're peaceful. So by spoiling children, by giving them unnecessary excessive sense gratification, you're actually ruining their lives. They're getting, it's shreyas and prayas. They're getting a little happiness now, but they'll be frustrated and anxiety and never be happy again once they grow older. Because they'll always be expecting. When things get hard, they won't know how to deal with it. They'll just cry.
in their hearts.
So we see in cultured people, even very, very wealthy people, they keep their children simple. Because they understand this. They don't want them to be spoiled. They want them to have inner integrity and some self-satisfaction. They will be able to actually learn how to deal with the struggles of the world with a stable mind. But at the same time, you have to give the child satisfaction. Therefore, children are trained to be satisfied with a simple life. I remember one of my godbrothers, he had a little tiny daughter in America. I saw these other children, they have bedrooms with just oceans of toys and teddy bears and all things to play with. And they have like hundreds of these things. And I want this, I want, and whatever they have, they want something else. And they'll cry until they get it, and their parents will get it, and then they'll cry until they get something else. Well, what about all these things? No, I don't want it. I want this instead. And then they play with it for a while and they throw it. I want that instead. And soon it's just like an accumulation. It's like mountains of toys and playthings. And still they want something else. And I saw one of my godbrother's little daughters, little girl. She had a seed of a fruit. Avocado seed. Seeds about this big. And she was just totally happy, just playing with that seed day after day after day. Hare Krishna. So who's happier? The person with the avocado seed, or the person with room full of bears and tigers and guns and knives and all kinds of other toys? Huh? Simplicity. If we train children to be satisfied taking shelter of Krishna in their childhood, then it will be their very nature to take shelter of Krishna throughout their lives. Srila Prabhupada explained, when he was a little, from his birth, he would see his mother and father worshipping Radha Govinda. This was the environment. If they see their mother, father watching television, then they're going to want to watch television. If they see their mother and father engaging in materialistic activities for enjoyment, that's what they're going to want to do. Children follow their parents, especially at that age. They don't know what else to do. So Prabhupada, little Abhay Charan, he just wanted deities. So he got deities, and he would worship deities. He wanted Bratiyatra. He gave so much, of course he was, his humility, he gave so much of the credit of his great mission to his mother and father, because from his very birth he only saw them worshipping the deities, chanting the holy names, and serving Vaishnavas. Maharaj Parikshit himself grew up in that environment. What we expose our children to is the impressions that will be within their consciousness throughout their entire lives. That is a fact. Children should be raised with love. But what is love? Love means actually being a real well-wisher of that person's soul. By inspiring that child, by influencing that child in bhakti. And if they see that we're always with Krishna, we're always with devotees, and then we're cruel to them, then they're going to think that this bhakti is cruel. That this Krishna must be cruel. But if you're loving and affectionate to them, then they're going to naturally experience that bhakti, the process of love and devotion, and Krishna himself is affectionate. Krishna loves me. There's stability. And as children begin to learn, if we train them to learn with Krishna as the basis of learning, we're actually giving them something that is real, that is eternal. Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, he was teaching grammar. But after he met his Guru Maharaj, the only thing he could teach was Krishna. He was a grammar teacher. He would teach that every root of every verb is Krishna. The students were amazed. They never heard anything like this. Nobody had ever taught such a style before in history. One student said, "Can you explain verbal roots?" And Krishna, and he explained, the root of all action is the soul, because verb means action, right? The root, the cause of all action, is the soul. Without the soul, you're just a dead corpse. The soul is the source of all action. And the soul is part of Krishna, the Supreme Soul. Therefore, the only real dhatu or verbal root is Krishna. So we should chant the names of Krishna. In this way, Jiva Goswami wrote Harinamamrita Vyakarana. Learning everything about Sanskrit in reference to Krishna. And Srila Prabhupada is explaining here that the leaders of the Krishna consciousness movement, it is necessary for them to start educational institutions by which children can integrate their studies in life in a spirit of service to Krishna, in an environment of purity. Actually, Prabhupada, in his very honest way, he said that the school systems of today are more often than not spiritual slaughterhouses. We imbibe within people's minds so much greed, so much passion, so much desire for enjoyment, so much exposure to various types of sinful, egoistic life. But how is that person's character being formed? The problem in this world is not lack of education. The problem in this world is not lack of food. The problem in this world is lack of character. Rich people are greedy rather than charitable. Educated people are egoistic rather than sympathetic. Therefore, you have all the material problems of this world. To develop one's moral, ethical, and spiritual character is what will give integrity and satisfaction to a child's life. And this is necessary. It's a very serious subject matter. Srila Prabhupada went through great efforts to establish Gurukula, to give people the opportunity to learn the culture and the science of devotional service from the age of 5. before five, really all the child has is the environment of home. If the environment of home is devotional, they will be deeply affected by that devotion. If they're not spoiled with all kinds of artificial, superficial, so-called necessities, then they'll be content. They'll be creative. The other day at IIT, one professor was explaining the importance of creativity. Krishna consciousness, in a simple way, when it is presented, it energizes from the very heart the deepest sense of creativity. Because we're imbibing within people the desire to serve, the desire to please. And devotional service demands incredible amounts of creativity. We're not just robots. We're trained in a philosophy. There are certain disciplines to stabilize our consciousness and to keep our goal focused. But then there's unlimited creativity in which we can express our desire and our willingness to please Krishna, to achieve that goal. Srila Prabhupada was so happy when he saw his disciples using their creativity to practice Krishna consciousness and to spread Krishna consciousness. So for children, if they are given at their home this beautiful life of bhakti, it will have such an impact on their lives. But then when they're about 5 years old, then they have to actually start the whole process of education. Then their consciousness starts going beyond their own little house. They're going to want more friends, more social life. It's years of a much more dangerous type of exploration. So if there is educational institutions by which all of those inclinations are satisfied and accommodated in a setting of devotion, and that child is being given the greatest fortune, the most special opportunity in life. Kali Yuga is very powerful. Its influence is all-pervading. How to protect our children from that? That should be the most serious meditation and contemplation of parents. Education should be given not as a professional career. Education should be given in a spirit of compassion and love. Education should be centered around the goal of life. Rajavidya Rajaguyam Pavitramitadutama. King of education, the most secret of all secrets, the most confidential knowledge, which alone can bring real happiness, is understanding the soul's relationship with God. The Prabhupada explains, the face of the whole world will change automatically if we devotees just educate our small children
in a spirit of pure devotional service.
Not depriving them of those things that will bring joy, but actually giving them those things that will give joy. Teaching them, actually Prabhupada explains that for children, tapasya is fun. For adults, sometimes it's really difficult. Why? Because we're spoiled. But for children, tapasya is actually fun. If it's presented with love, if it's presented in an exciting way, they like tapasya. We have seen children like to just roll around in the ground, right? For an adult, that's tapasya. For a children, it's play. To sleep on the floor. Even myself, I was born in the United States of America. And I remember in KG, we don't call it KG, we call it kindergarten. So, like Gopal Garden or is kindergarten? So, there are all these different ways of educating, but they're all fun, exciting. And then at a certain time of the day is rest. That was the time everyone hated the most, is the rest time. You had to go to sleep for about 15 minutes. In the middle of the day. Would you like to know the name of my teacher? Kindergarten teacher? Somehow I remember. Her name was Mrs. Puzzle. So Mrs. Puzzle, she had so many nice games, and they were all learning games. And then now it's nap time. And you know where all of us had to go to sleep? On the floor. Hare Krishna. Because it's not that, you know, there's 25 children in the room. It's not that they bring in 25 beds for everyone to take and to go to sleep on. They just had these little mats. Like what the brahmacharis sleep on. Just little mats. They just put them, everyone would go to the corner of the room and get their little mat and put it on the floor. No pillows, just go to sleep like this. And everyone's so happy, just like. So it was fun. Then we go home and we wanted to sleep on the floor, and mother said, "What are you doing on the floor? You think you're a dog? You have to sleep on the bed." I'd say, "Why, you're a saying dog." Blah, blah, blah. As far as I've seen, every dog in America sleeps on their master's bed. So austerity is actually fun for little children. And if they learn how to have fun with simple things in life, then their whole life it will be nice. If you're not spoiled. So Prabhupada explained like this. When there's a compassionate, sweet mood, exciting with learning about Krishna, austerity is fun. And it builds character. It brings contentment. It brings a composed mind that can overcome reversals and obstacles. And by developing vision and projects to inspire this type of culture, we can build tremendous hope in this very, very confused world that we are living in today. As members of the Krishna Consciousness Movement, this is our duty. On behalf of Lord Krishna
with all humility and a spirit of service, to create an environment of hope, and faith, and joy. That will satisfy the body, the mind, and the soul. When Krishna is in the center, and when we learn and understand that our real pleasure is pleasing Krishna, then life becomes sublime. Bhagavatam says, when you water the root of the tree, every part of the tree is nourished and happy. But what happens to a tree where every leaf, every flower, and every fruit, they're all fighting with each other, trying to get some water? One flower says, I want that water. Another flower says, get out of my way, I want that flower. I want that water. And then the piece of fruit says, I'm bigger than you. Boom! I will take the water. What happens to the tree? Just shrivels up. No one's satisfied. But if every part of the tree unanimously decides in harmony, let's just all give water to the root, then everything will, every flower, every fruit will blossom. It's so simple. When we live in harmony together to please Krishna, we become happy. That is the peace formula. To just work in harmony together, live in harmony together to please Krishna. Sam siddhir hari toshanam. That's our goal. That's our pleasure. Understanding what is it that pleases Krishna. And living by those principles. That is happy life. That is the greatest need in today's world. And to the extent we can share this gift, this matchless gift with the world, to that degree our life is truly meaningful. If you have everything without meaning, then how deep can your satisfaction in life be? A life with substance is a life with meaning. There is a saying, if you have nothing that you're willing to die for, you really don't have anything to live for. And we see people, they develop missions in life. But what is the greatest mission? This is what is described in Srimad Bhagavatam and Bhagavad Gita. The most meaningful way of living is when we live with an understanding of the eternal. What is beyond the superfluous, temporary manifestations that are perceived by our mind and senses. To understand the eternal soul and its relationship with the all-loving, all-merciful, supreme Lord Krishna. And to live our life practically according to that understanding, which means to live in a spirit of devotion. To aspire not to plunder but to serve. That is the life of ultimate meaning and satisfaction. At every stage of life, without wasting time, we should follow these principles, and we should share this great gift with others. This is Srila Prabhupada's contribution. And I thank you very much. Srila Prabhupada ki.